Okay, Perek Hey. Perek Hey is, of course, Shirat Devara. And as we've said before, a number of times mentioned that the Shira in this particular instance is more than just Shira. Maybe based on what we'll come up with, it's either more than just Shira or less than just Shira, but it's different than typical Shira in the sense that it's not just a inspirational reflection on the story, but there's much of the story itself that's embedded into the text of the Shira. Many pieces of information that we get from the storyline of the Shira, not only the poetry of it, that we didn't see in Perek Dalet. And that's really our primary goal as we go through it, which is to read between the lines what's going on that she's reflecting on that we didn't already see. What I'd like to do today is read through the Shira, read, translate, try to just understand simple words and meaning. And then we will spend a little bit of time discussing it. My primary goal for today is just to see the structure of the Shira. What is it saying and how is it built? And then we'll spend a little
finish the discussion from last week?
What was the discussion last week? Remind me.
About understanding Devorah and
Yael. Yeah, I think we came to a conclusion that there are multiple approaches to understanding what happened. Certainly, I think there's a consensus amongst, with the exception of Abshimim and Lakish, but there's a certain intuitive consensus that what happened in the tent wasn't innocent. Some discussion as to who initiated it, the issue. Was she actively seducing him in order to subdue him as a kind of her way of taking him out? Or was she innocently giving him safe haven and food and sustenance, and he turned on her? And after he exhausted himself, she, as an act of self-defense, killed him. I happen to have a bias towards the latter, primarily because I think it fits the broader context of the way Devorah describes how things took place. Meaning that in Devorah's mind, from the very beginning, when she says to Barak, if I go with you, this battle won't be yours to claim victory over, what she was saying is that everything in the story was going to happen by divine providence and not by design, or not by military design, not by your hand. And so everything's going to happen because of circumstances. You're going to win the battle in the battlefield because it's going to rain. The army is going to escape because it got muddy suddenly. The sister's going to run into the wrong tent. He's going to do the wrong things, and he's going to end up getting killed by a peg, by a hammer, right? Rather than a military context. So from the perspective of what she sets out from the very beginning, it actually fits the storyline more consistently if you look at it from the perspective of not a premeditated attack where Yael decides to take on a military role and take out the general for the benefit of Barak, which is how we would have otherwise understood it, but rather to see the whole thing as an accident. He happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, did the wrong things, and ended up getting killed for it. And then Barak comes, and he can't walk back into the camp and with the head of Sisera in his hands, like David could do with Goliath, and say, look what I did. That's the key point from the very beginning of the story, that military victory is going to be denied him because he refused to go it alone. He insisted that the Navi come with. Well, if the Navi comes with, the Navi will direct the divine providence of the arena on multiple fronts and not necessarily on a military front. So from that perspective, it fits the Biad Isha Tinkoa Shemet Sisra. that we talked about several weeks ago. That was, I think, actually the postscript that I meant to talk about at the end of this year, and
right,
I think that I missed.
Said we'll continue.
Oh, did I say that? Yeah, that was the piece. That was the that one. Mm-hmm. It's actually that. It's like I ran out of time with that one line, but that's a very important.
So do most people vote the way you vote?
Nobody votes in this exercise. It's a question of question of here are your mefarshim, here are your midrashim. Essentially, I have three in when I look at Chazal, I have three different approaches. Reish Lakish, she says, take the story at face value of Perek Dalet, none of this reading into it of a sexual context because that's not the issue. He never touched her, she never touched him. I have the straightforward reading of the Gemara, Rabbi Yochanan, who says that he slept with her seven times, unclear as to who initiated it. And then I have Tosfot, who seems to imply that in fact he initiated it, and that she was therefore passive, which would have turned it into a much more aggressive type of incident. Okay, Perek Hey. V'tashar Dvora uvarak ben Avinoam v'yomahu lemor. Dvorah and Barak ben Avinoam sang on that day, sang. So right away, there's an interesting grammatical problem.
V'tashar
is?
She,
single, correct. She in the singular. It actually, not only is it she in the singular, it's also, actually
no,
it's not. It's actually in the past. Right, so it's actually in the past.
Right.
Right, so that's okay. Vatasha would be, she said, yeah, but that would be more, sort of a more poetic type of. But the notion of Vatasha, if it said Vatasha Dvora, we could stop there. But Vatasha Dvora Uvarak Ben Avinoam is somewhat problematic. There is a simple solution to that problem. How does Shirat Hayam begin?
As Yashir Moshe
Uvnei Yisrael. So I have the exact same problem there. It should be as
Yashiru.
It's not. It's as Yashir Moshe Uvnei Yisrael. The Chazal Darsh in the future tense there. Why isn't it past tense? Yashir should be as Sharu. But the truth is that that's not such a problem textually, because the az, the word az, functions in Tanakh in a poetic form in the same way that the Vav HaYipuch functions. It's a poetic form of the Vav HaYipuch. And you'll see it often in Shira. So az Yashir is the same as past tense, but it's in the singular. And the reason it's in the singular is because let's talk about Shirat Hayam first of all. Why isn't it in the singular?
Maybe he initiated and then Bnei Israel joined in.
I'm sure he initiated it, and not only am I sure he initiated it, if you think about it, one of the great mysteries of Shirat Hayam, if you look at it from the perspective of everybody sat there and sang together, so what do they do? Hand out the words? They photocopy the words and give it out to everybody like a handout? What is Az Yashir Moshe Bnei Yisrael? They all stood up and spontaneously began to sing this long piece of poetry. So some taka say Api Nevuah that they all came to the same words at the same time, but that's very difficult to explain and unnecessary. Gemara says that it was sung in the form of halal, meaning
He sang and they repeated.
And then the Gemara has a discussion as to what they repeated. Did they repeat each sentence after Moshe sang it or said it? Or did they repeat a chorus? Moshe said each line and the people responded with a chorus line. What would be the chorus that they responded with?
We believe in Hashem.
Not quite. We actually know what the chorus is. How do we know what the chorus is? I'll show you. Take a look at Shmot Perek Tetvav. Perek Tetvav begins, Az Yashir Moshe B'nei Yisrael Tashira Zot LaHashem V'yamu Lemor Ashir LaHashem Ki Go'oga'a Sus V'rochvod Amavayam. I will sing to God who is exalted for horse and chariot he has sank in the sea. Ozi V'zimatka V'hili L'shua Zeki L'ven Be'wa Ke'ev Yibaram Amenu, etc., etc. We go through the whole thing. Is there any sentence in this that stands out as the key line that B'nai Yisrael would have repeated each at each sentence as a chorus? Ashir LaHashem ki go'o ga'a sus v'rochvod amavayam. That statement, Ashir LaHashem, reads like a kind of a chorus, right? I will sing because God. This is what God has done. He has drowned the Egyptian army. The proof that that's the chorus... proof that that's the chorus is Miriam. Immediately following the Shira, Vatikach Miriam Nevi'ah Achot Aaron et Atot Biyada Vatetzena Kol Nashim Acharea Betupim Uvimcholot Vatan Lahem Miriam Shiru LaHashem Ki Go'o Ga'a Sus V'Rachvor Amavayam. Right. So the mystery of Miriam is what. What's she doing with the women differently than what the men are doing? So some say, well, you know, that's the source for Kalisha. You're not allowed to sing with the men, so they sing separately. But that's, I don't think the pshat of the perek. I think the pshat of the perek is that she's leading the women in the same chorus that the men are singing. Meaning, there you have it. Shiru LaHashem, or Shiru LaHashem, Ki Go'o Ga'a Sus V'Rachvod Amavayam. It's the exact same line. That's the key line that B'nai Yisrael are singing to, dancing to, speaking about, repeating, as Moshe is leading them line by line in Shirataya. So as Yashir, Moshe is intentionally in the singular because Moshe is the only one singing the whole thing. Everybody else is passively participating on some level. He's leading B'nai Yisrael. So you could look at it as saying Moshe sang leading B'nai Yisrael in the following song. As Yashir Moshe uv'nei Yisrael. Well, if that's the case by Shirat Hayam, then we could argue that that's the same structure in Shirat Devorah. We call it Shirat Devorah. We don't call it Shirat Devorah Ubarak. And in fact, it makes sense. The singular feminine. Right? But Tasha is singular feminine in the case of Devorah. So it's she who is singing, Vatasha Devorah, leading Barak and everybody else in this song. It's not clear that there's a chorus here, but certainly if he's there in a passive capacity, she's the one leading this song. And as we read through it, you'll see that she speaks about herself as clearly as about herself, and Barak as somebody else. In other words, the person speaking in this Shira is clearly Devorah. All right. That's by way of introduction. Now let's go through the text. Pasuk Bet. Bifroa praot b'Yisrael b'hitnadev am baruchu Hashem. Bifroa praot. The praot. Excuse me?
Strife,
tumult. When there was strife, when there was tumult, when there was bedlam, and when there was the prelude to war, if you will, mitnadev am baruch Hashem. When the nation volunteered, came forth by of their own initiative. Bitnadev am. Baruch Hashem either means a nation blessed by God, or what is more likely here because of the trup, you're getting technical, but there's a semicolon between the word am and baruch hu, the semicolon in the form of that upside down horseshoe, which is the etnachta. Therefore, you would read it, bitnadev am, as the people volunteered, baruch hu Hashem, bless God, meaning they are to be blessed, you are to be blessed by God. Who is she blessing?
People.
The people who came to fight this battle. Shimu melachim, ha'azinu roznim. Listen, kings. Take or hear, roznim. Roznim are
princes,
officers. Right, parallel to melachim. Poetry in Tanakh is always written in couplets. So shimu melachim ha'azinu roznim. Anochi laHashem. Anochi Ashira. Again, that first person, singular. I, to God, I will sing. Azamer laHashem Elokei Yisrael, I will sing to God of Israel. Anochi laHashem Elokei Yisrael. Azamer laHashem Elokei Yisrael, I will sing to Hashem, God of Israel. Hashem b'tzeitcha miseir, b'tzeadcha misteedom. God, as you came forth from Seir, Seir is Edom, b'tzaadcha miste Edom, when you marched forth from the fields of Edom, Eretz Ra'asha, gam shamayim natafu, the land trembled, the skies dripped, gam avim natfumayim, the waters, the clouds dripped their water. We looked at these psukim. Superficially, we looked at these psukim earlier when we looked at the battle. How the battle unfolded in Perek Dalet. Harim nazlu mipnei Hashem, mountains
melted.
Right, like before God, the mountain, the water running down the side of the mountain, streaming down the side of the mountain. It looks like the mountain itself is melting. Zeh Sinai mipnei Hashem elokei Yisrael. This is Sinai before God of Israel. The reference to Sinai we will come back to, but the reference to Sinai being what aspect of this story is she comparing? She's not saying this took place on High Sinai because we're nowhere near High Sinai. We're in Har Tabor. So what's the comparison? And the power of revelation. The power of revelation, which is most powerfully expressed in the context of war. And the hand of God in this battle clearly was a revelation equal in stature to the revelation at Sinai itself. The phraseology here of God marching forth, coming from Edom, which is way in the south, marching forth, coming from the different directions, is also a reference to High Sinai, because that's how Moshe describes Mamad High Sinai itself in the beginning of Vezot HaBracha. Hashem Miseir Ba V'Zerach Hashem. Let's get this pasuk mixed up. Never quote this pasuk by heart. Hashem misinai ba v'zarach miseir lamo hofia mehar paran ve'ata medivavot kodesh. God came from Sinai, shone forth from Seir, which is Edom in the south. Actually, from Hasina, Edom would be north. Hofia mehar Paran, appeared from the mountains of Paran, ata medivavot kodesh, came from the area of Rivavot Kodesh. In other words, Moshe is describing the Shekhinah arriving at Sinai, contrary to our popular conception. Moshe describes the Shekhinah arriving at Sinai not from above, but from north, south, east, and west, from all the directions. So they're sitting at Sinai, and the Shekhinah is arriving at Sinai from all directions, coming at that moment, converging. And here too you have this convergence of the Shekhinah arriving at the battlefield from a different location. Pasuk Vav. Bimei Shamgar ben Anat, Bimei Yael, Chadlu Arachot. in the days of Shamgar ben Anat. We talked about Shamgar ben Anat and how he ends up in Shirat Devorah as a reference, as a time reference, correct? Mm-hmm. Just that he would have been contemporary to the previous period of Ehud ben Geri, just in a different region, down south. In the days of Shamgar ben Anat, in the days of Yael, Chadlu Arachot. Chadlu Arachot, the roads were closed off, ceased. People ceased to travel on the Orach, on the way. Those who traveled the roads had to go the crooked byways. A kalkalot are crooked. They had to take detour routes in order to get anywhere because
Canaan controlled the roads.
Right, because the Canaanim controlled the primary road, which was Emek Yisrael. Chaluf prazon b'Yisrael chadelu. Prazon, is he translated as open cities or open roads? Open Zion.
Inhabitants of villages.
Freedom.
They ceased in Israel.
Inhabitants of?
Villages.
Villages, open cities, right. Prazim are in the Gemara Megillah, prazim are the opposite of Arim Mukafot Choma, right, walled cities. Sort of the larger cities were walled and therefore protected. The smaller cities, which were villages and didn't have a wall to protect them, they were open and therefore exposed. So not only are the roads dangerous, but if you're not protected, if you're not living in the large cities that are protected by a wall, then the villages are themselves exposed to the marauding Canaanites that are traveling through the land. And therefore, Chadlu Prazon b'Yisrael Chadelu, these villages ceased to be inhabited. People ran away from the villages. They ran to major centers where there was at least a wall that could protect them. Ad Shakamti Dvora Shakamti Em b'Yisrael. Until I arose in Israel, until I arose, mother of Israel. Until I arose, Dvora, until I arose, mother of Israel. All of this continued until? All of this continued until?
Until I stepped up
to save the day.
A little boasting.
Oh, it's more than a little boasting. That's a verse we will come back to at length.
You know, if you've got it, want it.
Right. That pasuk is going to be critical to our understanding of the whole context of the shir. It's one of the proofs, by the way, that I said earlier, alluded to earlier, that she's one singing here. Barak is nowhere to be seen.
Yeah. And nobody heard. Right.
Yeah, he wouldn't say Ad Shakamti Dvara. Yivchar Elohim Chadashim Az Lachem Sha'arim. In Shira, generally, tenses, past, future, are at play. They're expendable. Because the moment you deal with poetry, a lot of the rules of grammar fall away. I think that's probably true in most languages. But certainly for Hebrew poetry of Shira, type of Shira. So Yivchar Alehim Chadashim is actually in past tense, even though it's in the future without a Vavayipuch. Right? So Yivchar, he will choose, but in this case it means they chose. Elohim Chadashim?
New gods.
New gods. Az Lachem Sha'arim. The Az meaning? Right, cause and effect. Then, as the effect of Yivchar Elohim Chadashim, what was the result? Lachem Sha'arim. Lachem Sha'arim. The word Lachem here is confusing. Right? It doesn't mean bread. And it doesn't mean to you. It comes from the root? Milchama. Right. Az Lachem Sha'arim. Then there was war at the gates. Why was there war at the gates?
Because they had chosen other gods.
Because the people had sinned, because the people had strayed to other gods. That's how the story of every Shofet's era begins. Ve'az hara b'nei Asher. And she here articulates it very clearly. Yivchar Elohim Chadashim, Az Lachem Sha'arim. Magen im yera'e v'romach ba'arbim elef b'Yisrael. if you could find a spear or a shield amongst 40,000 of Israel.
She's questioning.
Meaning she's saying that this war begins when Israel is defenseless, unprepared. You can't find a spear or shield amongst 40,000 of Israel. And there's war at the gates. Libi l'chokkei Yisrael hamitnadvim ba'am. Baruchu Hashem. My heart l'chokkei Yisrael. L'chokkei Yisrael is an interesting phrase. Mechokek in modern Hebrew is a mechokek.
Well, I looked at the English, so it's probably a legislator.
Right, so chok, right, chok is a law, right? Zot chukat haTorah. Mechokek is a lawmaker, a legislator. Libi lechokekei Yisrael, the problem with that translation here is only that how did lawmakers get into the story? What relevance do they have? So chokekei can also be some form of leadership. Doesn't necessarily have to be legislative, but a kind of of leadership would be described as Chokkei Yisrael, and she praises that leadership. Libi l'Chokkei Yisrael. My heart goes out to the leaders of Israel. Hamitnadvim ba'am. Who? For the second time?
Volunteer.
Volunteer, for the second time. And every time she mentions the mitnadvim ba'am, she continues with the same phrase, Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem. Right? We had volunteers, Baruch Hashem. Because if we didn't have them, there'd be nobody to fight the war, right? And we'll see why there would be nobody to fight the war if we didn't have these mitnadvim. She praises them over and over again intentionally. This is not an accident. She's very clearly biased towards those who came and fought this war. Rochvei atanot tzocharot, those who rode on white donkeys. What's a white donkey have to do with anything?
Is it making fun of people who are like the rich guys?
If I can't.
The opposite.
Right, the opposite. No. The riding on a donkey in the period of Sefer Shoftim is a form of nobility. Right?
It's not a horse.
No. Well, horses are not indigenous to the land of Israel. And they're not particularly useful creatures in that region. Right? Especially when you're not dealing with an army with chariots. If you want an animal that is just to ride as a function of ride amongst your people, but not necessarily to ride you into battle, then a donkey's better, and a donkey has other, you know, can carry a much heavier burden, and a donkey is doesn't need much water, it's much easier to work with. But if you later in Sefer Shoftim, we'll see there's a whole phenomenon of an attempt at leader of establishing a dynasty or leadership. And so you have these Shoftim, of whom we know very little about, except that they have multiple wives, and therefore large families, multiple children, 30 children, 60 children, as described, because they haven't... Right? Part of Malchut in the ancient time was to have many heirs, and even if they didn't take over the throne, but they would take over leadership at various lower levels, because it was dynastic. So you didn't just have governors of cities appointed because they were elected to be a governor of a city. If the king was the king, then his sons would be the leaders of the various cities under his control. It's also a way of guaranteeing control of the leadership for generations to come. So you find a phenomenon of Vayhilo shloshim banim rochvim al shloshim ayarim u'shloshim ayarim lehem. For example, in Perek Yud, of a leader who has 30 sons riding on 30 donkeys ruling over 30 cities. And there's a pun on the word ear and ire. An ire is an ass colt, and an ear is a city. So there's 30 leaders riding 30 donkeys, leading 30 sons on 30 donkeys over 30 cities. And you have that phenomenon a number of times. So when she talks about Uchve Atonot, or Rochve Atanot Socharot, she's talking about a form of leadership. There's a pasuk in Zechariah, we actually refer to it in sort of the lore of Melech HaMashiach. There's a pasuk in Zechariah that describes the Melech HaMashiach as Ani V'Rochev HaChamor. Poor riding on a donkey. So we have this image of a poor man riding on a donkey because he can't afford a horse. But in the context, it's actually the opposite. He's poor, but yet, Rochev HaChamor. He's the leader. He's the king. He's riding on the donkey. Yoshvei al midin v'holchei al derech sichu. Those who sit on midin. Midin, so the Medrash also translates it from the word judgment, or judges. How do they translate it in the Netanyahu?
Youth and sit on couches.
On couches. How does the article translate it?
Judgment.
Judgment. See the difference? Right, does it come from the word? What's the root? Not clear. Yoshvei al midin, are you sitting on the couches? V'hochei al derech, which would be the opposite of those who walk on the way. Those are sitting at home. You couch potatoes. Those who are sitting on the walking on the way. Or is it continuing the description of the leadership, the powerful, the judges, the lawmakers, those who lead along the way? Either way, her comment to both of these groups is, sichu, speak. Meaning, tell the story. Don't let it sit. Tell the story. Mikol mechatzitzim ben mashabim. That's an interesting phrase. From the Mikol mechatzitzim ben mashabim. How do they translate it?
Rather than the
voice of archers.
What, you that...
Chetz, chotzitzim is an archer.
Louder than the voice of the archers in the places of drawing water.
Mechatzitzim are the archers, chetz, and mashabim is lishov shafte mayim b'sasom, and it's to draw water. So your voice of the story should outweigh or be louder than the voice of the archers or the drawing of the waters, meaning people who are, I guess, people who aren't involved, who don't know the story, who are going along the business. You have to tell them this story for generations to come. Sham yitanu tzidkot Hashem, tzidkot pirzono b'Yisrael. There you will tell, or you will give, the account of the righteousness of God, who defended pirzono b'Yisrael. Prazon, back to that, those villages of Israel. Az yardu l'sharim am Hashem. When down to the gates came the nation of God. Uri, Uri, Dvorah. Uri, Uri, Dabrishir. Awake, Dvorah. Awake. Speak the song. Kum, Barak. Ushevei Shev Yecha ben Avinoam. Arise, Barak, and take your captives, son of Avinoam. So there's your division of labor. Who does what?
She sings, and he
he's proclaiming, and he's
fighting.
Captain,
right. There was she tells him what was her instruction to him at the beginning of the battle? Kum Barak, right, get up, go. So that's what she says here. Kum Barak, Shvei Shevicha. That's my instruction. My instruction to him was to go. I would tell him when to start. I wave the flag. Uri, Uri, Dvora, awaken, Dvora, speak the song, sing the prophecy. And Barak, go and fight the battles. Az yarad sarid la'adirim am. Then the remnant went amongst the nobilities of the people. Hashem yarad li b'giborim. God came down to me amongst the mighty ones. Who the remnant is unclear. But now she starts to describe the tribes. Mini Ephraim. Shorasham Amalek. Count Ephraim. Their Shoresh is in Amalek. How is a Shoresh in Amalek? How did Ephraim come to Amalek? Acharecha Binyamin ba'amamecha. after you, Binyamin, Ba'amamecha, are amongst the people. How do they translate this phrase? Pasuk Yudalad?
Whose root against Amalek after you came Benjamin with your peoples.
Yeah, I have
from Machir descended lawgivers, and from Zevulun those who ply the scribal quill.
Right, we'll get to them in a moment. Meni Machir yadu mechokikim umizvulun moshkim b'shevet sefer. From Ephraim, meni meaning min, from Ephraim, were rooted in Amalek. I suspect she's talking about the fact that Ephraim was not particularly engaged in this battle with Emek Yisrael, because they were too busy fighting Amalek. Is my suspicion as to what she's talking about. Acharecha Binyamin ba'amamecha, after you came Binyamin. After you meaning
behind
you.
Yeah.
Okay. If the battle's up north, Ephraim is here. Binyamin is behind them. Well, among with your peoples, mini Machir. Machir is from the tribe of Menashe. Mechir ben Menashe. Meni mechir yardu mechokikim, lawgivers, meaning leaders, came. Umizvulun moshkim b'shevet sofer. And from Zvulun, those who drew the scepter of leadership. Shevet sofer, the book, the leadership. V'sarai b'yisachar im dvara. My ministers, my people, my praise, highest praise for the people of Yisachar, who were with Devorah. V'Yisachar ken Barak, v'Emek shulach b'raglav, with Yisachar, so Barak, into the valley, sent his feet. Who fought this battle? Who led the soldiers into the battlefield? Yisachar, Barak, with the tribe of
Yisachar.
Biflagot Reuven, gdolim kekelev. In the plains of Reuven, there is great kekelev. Kekelev means deliberation. Great deliberation. Lama yashavta ben mishpatayim. Why did you sit between the sheepfolds? Lishmoa shrikot adarim, listening to the bleeding of the sheep. Lishlagot Reuven gdolim chikrei lev. In the plains of Reuven, there is great deliberation, discussion. What's she saying?
They didn't join in the fight.
Yisachar's feet are marching into battle, and in the halls of the committees in Shevet Reuven, they're discussing what to do if they can leave their sheep and go to fight the battle. Right. Gilad, as for the tribes of Gilad, they live on the other side of the Yarden. Vidan, who's by the way up north, Lama Yagur Aniot, why do you live amongst the sheep, the boats, ships. Asher yashav l'chof yamim. Asher sat or dwells on the coast. V'al mifratzav yishkon. And upon his open seas, bays, continues to dwell. Listen, they've got ships and coming into port, and they've got commerce coming, and they can't just leave their commerce and their ships and go run into battle. Somebody's got to look after the home front over there. Zvulun, as for Zvulun, Am Cheref Nafsholamut, a nation that risked their lives, put their lives on the line. V'naftali al miromei sadeh, and Naftali on the high places of the fields. Well, what has she done in these last couple of psukim?
She told us to participate in the battle.
She's given us a very clear picture of which tribes answered the call and which tribes didn't.
I mean, if you look at your map geographically, that makes sense. Those are the tribes in the area where the Canaanites were around the Emek Yisrael, wasn't that true?
True, from around the Emek Yisrael is where the trouble starts. Mm-hmm. She evidently has an expectation that all the tribes would come to help. And she's very clear and unambivocal as to which tribes answered the call and which tribes did not, excused or unexcused.
But she's here to proclaim those tribes and their greatness, correct? And their leaders.
The ones who came.
Right.
She says so twice. Bitnadev am bachu Hashem.
That's her purpose.
Correct. And at the same time?
Criticize those who didn't come.
Very clearly. Right. And she doesn't mince her words. Right. And she leaves, what's the expression? She leaves...
No rocks unturned.
No. She doesn't pull her punches. She doesn't pull her punches. She really. We'll come back to this. Where we're going to geographically map out which tribes are where and why this division took place. It's not an accident that there's a geographic spread here. Which tribes are mentioned? Which tribes are not mentioned? She leaves out one or two. She leaves out Yehuda completely, and Yehuda is the largest of the tribes. She starts in Ephraim, north. We'll come back to all of these things. Ba'u melachim nilchamu. Kings came and fought wars. Az nilchamu malchei Kna'an. B'tanach, Amei Megiddo. Then the nations of Kna'an came. Who are the nations of Kna'an? They fought at the cities of Tanach and Megiddo, or the waters of Megiddo. Betza kesef lo lakachu. They didn't come for money. This was an ideological battle. Min shamayim nilchamu. Who met them on the battlefield? Who met them on the battlefield?
Hashem.
Min shamayim nilchamu. Hakochavim mimesulatam nilchamu im Sisra. The stars fought against Sisra in their course or in their shooting stars. Nachal kishon grafam. The vadi itself, the river, swallowed them up. Nachal Ktumim Nachal Kishon, this ancient brook of Kishon, Tidrechi Nafshi Oz. Nafshi, my soul is strengthened, is elevated by the experience of what took place. Az Halmu Ikvesus, the horse hoofs were mired in the mud, Midaharot Darot Abirav, from the galloping of their horses, Oru Maroz Amar Malach Hashem. Cursed be Meroz, said the Malach Hashem. Oru Arur Yoshveha, cursed be its inhabitants. Who is Meroz? Right. She hasn't finished. Right? The Canaanites came and fought, and God met them on the battlefield. Nachal Kishon, we talked about the nature of how this battle unfolded, swallow them up. Next. Now she's going to go back to Arur and Baruch. She's continuing her list of who's cursed and who's blessed. She's handing out grades here. So Arur Yoshveha, cursed be its inhabitants of Meroz. Why? Ki lo vau le'ezrat Hashem b'giborim. Because they refused to come to the aid of God. The aid of God amongst the heroes, amongst the warriors. We don't know a lot, except that all we know is what's written here, which is that at some point or another, they must have turned to the people of Meroz for help. And they evidently refused. Now, whether that was before the battle or during the battle, Meroz must be in the region of Emek Yisrael that would have turned to them for assistance, and they probably would have said no because they claimed. Why would they have said no? At least early on, before the battle would have taken place, they would have said no because
there was no chance that
they wanted to stay neutral. Why should they aid one side in a conflict which could easily end up losing? So, Arur Meroz, cursed be the people of Meroz. On the other hand, in Pasuk of Dalet, Tevorach Minashim Yael. Blessed amongst the women is Yael, Eshet Chever HaKeni, Minashim Ba'ol Tvarach. Blessed Mrs. Chever HaKeni amongst all of the women of the tent.
She then goes through every detail of the story there.
Uh-huh.
Of Yael's story.
Why not? She's the heroine. Maim Sha'al Chalav Natana B'Sefer Adarim Yukriva Chema'a. This we talked about last week. Yadale Yatet Tishlachna V'Yimina L'Halmut Amelim. He asked for water, she gave him milk, she served him on vessels of nobility. Then she grabbed the peg, grabbed the hammer, V'Halma Sisra Machakavasho, and pierced Sisra's temple, U'Machatza V'Chafar HaKato, pierced his temple, and he fell. Ben Nagle Kara Nafal Shachav, Ben Nagle Kara Nafal, Vasher Kara Sham Nafal Shadut. That's a pasuk we looked at and talked about last week at length. He fell between her legs. Ba'ada Chalon Nishkafa Vatiyabev Im Sisra Ba'ada Ishnaf. Looking out the window is poor Mrs. Sisra's mother. Sisra's mother. Right. Aim Sisra. Sisra the elder. Right. Mrs. Sisra the senior. Madua Boshesh Bolavo. Why is he taking so long to come? Madua Echeru Pame Makvotav. How come I don't hear the.
He never calls. Yeah. He doesn't write.
No emails.
He's late again. We'll call him the late Sisra.
In two aspects. Two ways.
That's right. Chachmot sarateha ta'anena. Afhi tashiv amarehala. So the elder, the wise friends, saroteha, the sarot, the princesses, were sitting there amongst, trying to comfort her. They offered her advice, offered her suggestions to why he's late, and she answered them. So this is the dialogue that's now taking place. Halo yimtzui chalku shalal. They will have to find, or they found, must have found,
booty.
Racham rachamatayim l'rosh gaver.
Right.
What?
To every man a damsel.
Right. How does racham rachamatayim come to a damsel? Correct, because it's a reference to the womb. Right? Racham rachamatayim, a womb or two for each. One.
Pretty graphic,
huh? Yeah. Right? Imagine that as comfort to Mrs. Sisra Senior.
It's part of the booty.
Shalal tzva'im l'sisra, that's for the soldiers. Right? The soldiers get rechem rechamatayim l'rosh gever. What does Sisra get? Sisra gets shalal tzva'im. The booty of? The garments.
Right.
The garments of nobility, the garments of colors. Shalal tzvaim rikma, tzeva rikmatayim letzavarei shalal. The colorful garments that are for the neck, to adorn the neck of the booty. Now the garments here aren't for Sisra, they're for
the women.
Either for the women or for
his mother.
Who do they decorate in battle? When they came home from battle, what do they decorate?
You mean the soldiers?
The generals?
No.
Soldiers?
No.
The horses?
No.
Oh,
they put it on the...
Right.
Right? Put it on the horses. What's her answer?
They talk about necks of spoilers.
The next pasuk is already back to Devorah. Mm. Right. It's interesting. There is no answer to these chachamot. Devorah begins by saying... They answered her, and she responded. Afhi tashiva amare hala. So what did they say? They talked about rechem rachamatayim and shalal tzvaim.
Was she left speechless?
So either she's left speechless, right? Either she's left speechless, or she is comforted,
right.
Or she's not comforted. She's saying to herself, "The idiots! Right? This is mother or sister. What do I care about rechem rachamatayim?" Not clear. Not clear. But Devorah's final...
I think she would be rendered speechless after...
Well, really,
well, she doesn't say anything. All it says here is that she's sitting at the window crying, wondering, Madua Boshesh Lechbo Lavo. It's a very pitiful scene, if you will. It's very, she's sitting there crying because her son is late, and she's worried about him, and their comfort, and their words of comfort is,
he's collecting booty.
It's a grand old time. It's a,
the cynicism here, I detect not an insignificant amount of cynicism on behalf of either the Chachamot or Devorah, who is clearly poking fun at this Canaanite world.
Could this just be something that Devorah is thinking that, because after all, was his mother on the battlefield? Was she really?
No, this is her poetic vision, description of, right, 100%.
Back at the camp,
that's right.
His mother 100%. Is sitting there asking where he is.
That's exactly what she's doing.
No, he's already been.
Correct. That's exactly what she's doing. She is intensifying. Remember, this is in the heels of the description of Yael and Sisera. Sisera's attack at this description of Vechem Hamatayim is not an accident. It feeds back into our discussion last week about the nature of how this attack unfolded. It's not uncharacteristic. It's actually further proof to the position that says that he may have actually tried to rape her. It's not uncharacteristic to the Canaanites to behave in this way. Look what Sisera's mother would be saying, and look what they would have said to her. This is an image that she's painting for us to understand the significance of what Yael has done. She's killed Sisera. Nebuch, poor Sisera's mother, is sitting there worried why he's late, and they're joking about the fact that he must have had his way with women. He had his way with one woman too many. Words of Yael. And then her final comment, Ken Yovdu Kol Eivecha Hashem. So should be the end of all your enemies, O God. Va'ohavav kitzeta shemesh b'gvurata. And as for those who love you, those who are loyal to you, like the sun emerges in its strength, so too should they have victory for generations to come. Va'tishkot ha'aretz arbim shana. The land was quiet for 40 years.
But that's not. That's the code. That's really. But that can't be part of the song.
No, that's not part of the song. That's just there because it fills in the text format. But right. It's actually the next. That's part of the narrative. Right. Correct.
Why? That's, because she wouldn't be saying that.
You know, that's part of the same phrase that we've had all along.
Right. I know. But she wouldn't say that.
No, it's not part of.
It's after the fact. I know you're going to cover many things, but when you have Azia Shir, it's written the way it's written. Is all Shira written? I mean, in terms of its staff,
The layout? Right. So the layout, all Shira is written in one of two formats. Right. One of two formats. All Shira that is longer than one verse. We have references in Tanakh to Shira that are one verse songs, and that doesn't have this layout. It's too short to have this laid, even though it's grammatically structured the same way. So Shira is laid out in one of two formats, either in this format or in two columns like Shirat Hazinu. Now Chazal actually darshan the difference based on the nature of the Shira. The stronger the Shira, the more likely it'll be in this format. The weaker the Shira, it'll be in two columns. And Chazal connected to the strength of a wall. When you build a wall and you layer the bricks in such a way that they are overlapping each other, you have a stronger structure than when you just take two columns of bricks separately and glue them together. So the overlap or the interlocking of the bricks creates strength. So Chazal said, therefore, that's a stronger Shira. There are three classic examples of that structure. Shira Tayam, Shirat Devorah, and the third is? It's important because we're going to compare all three. Zota Bracha is actually not written in either format because it's short paragraphs of Shira, also written in poetry, but because it's short, it doesn't have that structure. The classic, or the third that's written in this format? Clearly you've never read it as Haftorah. Shirat David. Shirat David, which is actually the last, the end of Shmuel Bet. Take a quick. Shmuel Bet, Perek Chof Bet. It's always laid out in Tanakh in that way. So you can see it actually in a Sefer, in a Chumash or in a Navi, it's laid out the same way. Right. This the reason it's laid out this way is because that's how it's laid out in the text of the scroll. Right. In Parakhav Bet, Vayedaber David La Hashem et Divrei Hashira Hazot Biyom Mitzil Hashem Oto Mikaf Kol Evav Umikaf Sha'ur. It's longer, actually, yes. It's the longest Shira that we have, and it appears actually twice in Tanakh. It appears here, and almost verbatim, it's repeated in Sefer Tehillim, because it's taken from here and put into Sefer Tehillim. That's Shirat David. So one of the exercises we will have to go through is a comparison of the themes and focus of each one of these three Shiras, because they're very similar, but the difference, as we've said many times, the moment you have a comparison, it's the differences between them, it's the contrast between them that make all the difference in the world. The other Shira type is Shirat HaAzinu, which if you look at, which is Devarim Perek Lamed Bet, and you see it is written in two columns. Correct? Now, if you actually read through the text and you listen to the cadence, you'll see that Shirat HaZinu is written in a tempo or in a cadence that is based on two phrases. HaZinu HaShemayim Ba'aretz Tishma Aretz Yimayfi Yerav Kamata Lekhi Tizal Katal Yimati Kisirim Alei Deshe Kirvivim Alei Yesef Kishem HaShem Akra Havu Godel Lekenu. It's written grammatically and in cadence in that kind of couplet phrases, whereas Shirat Devora, Shirat Hayam, Shirat David are written in triads, in three phrases, which is why the structure separates between two columns and three columns. Another example of a two-column Shira. Now I'm going to test your memory. Because that's the last time we discussed this. Now I'm going to test your memory. Yeshua, oh. Perek, where in Yeshua would there have been Shira?
Oh, here it is.
Mm-hmm. What's in Perek Yud Bet? Correct. The list of the kings whom Yeshua conquers. And what we had suggested, although it never says the word Shira there, but by its very structure we had suggested that that list was in fact a song of victory, a song of Shira. And it lists each one of the kings followed by the word Echad, which is also odd. Why would you need to repeat the word Echad for each king? Each city only had one king, we know that. So what we had suggested was that that was like Shirat Hayam, was a chorus. Melech Yericho, and the people responded Echad. Melech Ha'ai, and the people responded Echad. So it's read much like a Shira, almost with a chorus line attached to it. And again, all of these we will have to compare, contrast, and explore B'ezrat Hashem next week. Next week will be our last class for this series, and we will pick up again B'ezrat Hashem after the Chagim.